the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, my name's Matt Brand. Welcome to the program on a Friday lunchtime. On the Country Hour today, I'm going to tell you about a massive ghost net that's been pulled out of the ocean near Groote Island.
This one here is probably a kilometre long. You stretched it out, and a bit like an iceberg, what you see on the surface, the bubbles, just add another 90%, which will be underwater.
Also today, you'll be off to Undoolia Station for some Bronco branding action. And before 1:30, we do the Mango Bango with George the Farmer.
Do the Mango Bango. We all go bongo for the Mango Bango. Taste so sweet.
Yeah, ABC Kids character George the Farmer, he's been in the Northern Territory filming some brand new episodes for his series on ABC Me and ABC iView. What has George been up to in the Northern Territory? You'll find out today. All sorts of things on the Country Hour menu today. I hope you can stick around. We are broadcasting right across the Territory on the ABC, streaming online. And g'day there if you are tuning in via our podcast. First up today, before we mango bango, let's talk about live exports. Indonesia has long been Australia's biggest customer for live cattle, but at the moment, this crucial trade is doing it pretty tough. The Indonesia-Australia Red Meat and Cattle Partnership has just released its mid-year update on the state of the industry, and the report, it highlights a number of issues, ranging from the pandemic to problems caused by the high Aussie cattle price and evidence of feedlots going out of business completely. This afternoon, we're joined by Troy Setter, who's the Chief Executive of the Consolidated Pastoral Company, and he's also a member of the Indonesia-Australia Red Meat Partnership. Thanks for your time this afternoon.
Thanks, Matt. Great to be with you again.
What's your take on how the live export trade to Indonesia is going right now?
Look, Matt, it's absolutely fair to say and stark for everyone involved that the cattle price out of Australia is exceptionally high due to the ongoing impacts of several years of drought where the herd is depleted. And I think the difference between the 19 drought and previous droughts is the whole of the Australian herd got depleted. And we're seeing some really stiff competition from other markets and southern restocking that's been pulling cattle out of the Northern Territory, out of the Kimberley and out of North Queensland down south. And also at the start of the year to other markets like Vietnam. So there's less volume, the price is up, and that's really impacting the trade. On top of that, there's challenges with COVID. I think beef is certainly a loved product in Indonesia, and local beef and Aussie beef that's fresh is loved. And we are seeing less weddings, less parties, less gatherings and celebrations, and that's often where red meat, particularly fresh beef, is served. And so the high cattle price and the demand challenges have really challenged the trade at this time.
On the price, the live cattle price out of Darwin since about November, I think it is, has been above $4 a kilo. So it's obviously causing problems at the Indonesian end, but do you really see that price changing much anytime soon?
Look, I don't see it changing until, at earliest, Matt, April, May next year, unless there's some sort of extreme event. I think it's a discussion for another day, but I think we all took a bit of a sigh of relief this week when the two atypical cases of BSC in Brazil were found to sort of have no other baggage, and China and Brazil have been able to open up their case. So unless there's something sort of left field, I see high prices for a while. And I also see that could flow well into next year, but it'll be at least until the start of the dry season next year until we see that sort of more supply come onto the market.
So what can Indonesian feedlots do then?
So look, the Indonesian feedlots have not only been challenged by high cattle prices, they've been challenged by COVID and market challenges and high feed prices, and then the cross rates of the Aussie dollar, US dollar and IDR have been a challenge as well. That said, though, it's not all doom and gloom. June was a really big month of cattle that went to Indonesia. There's been some bigger numbers in July, August and September, and out to the rest of the year are looking a bit quieter. But we've seen some feedlotters in Indonesia really focus on the efficiency of the operations, cost cutting, making sure that they're really hitting the most tighter specification they can for their butchers, so that the butchers can afford to pay. And we've seen some good innovation since COVID started with internet deliveries of meat and trying to fit into home deliveries and things like that for red meat, that have meant that some of the feedlots have been able to weave their way through it. We've also seen solid demand for cows out of Northern Australia going to Indonesia to try and average the price. So,
right.
Not only have we seen high feeder steer prices at over $4, we've seen cows push over $3 this year, but those cows on a cents per kilo basis and kilos of meat have been cheaper, and that's allowed some of the feedlotters to average their product. And we've also seen the butchers in Indonesia doing a bit more blending. So there's certainly blending of Indian buffalo meat with Aussie live cattle offal. And that's gone into some of the further value added products like Buxo balls, and that's been able to manage that price challenge a bit and help some of the importers and the meat traders in Indonesia work their way through this time.
Is that a good news story though for the Australian cattle industry to hear Aussie meat getting blended with Indian buffalo?
Look, it's been happening for years, for a very long time. You could look at it and say that's not a good story, but if they weren't able to take that cheaper buffalo and mix it with the offal from Australian cattle, that wouldn't allow them to pay the prices they've been paying for Australian cattle. So it's I think it's a bit of a necessary evil. It's value adding the offal from Australian cattle, and it's allowing exporters to pay the rates that they need to pay for cattle in Northern Australia. We shouldn't over focus that it's the only thing that's being done, but it's one of many things that the importers in Indonesia have had to innovate and look at to remain competitive and keep buying Australian cattle.
This report says three Indonesian feedlots have been mothballed and four have permanently shut down. How damaging is that going forward?
Look, I think going forward that that could be damaging. At the moment, there's the feedlots that are up there that are still open aren't full. So we're not seeing a sort of drop off in competition or not being able to fill demand situation. Look, going forward, when the herd gets bigger in Northern Australia, and if we do get, or not if, when we get drought conditions again, and live export really takes up the slack. If you look at the big droughts of 08, 09, 18, 19 through Northern Australia, it's where live export really stepped in and took a lot of unfinished cattle and additional cattle. Those feedlots do take up some of that space. That said, I've spoken to a couple of feedlots that are shut in Indonesia and have said that they're permanently shut. And a couple of them have said, look, if the Aussie cattle price comes back down and the margin comes back into it, they'll look to reopen. And then there's a few feedlots that are in a bit of a generational time or a different ownership sort of structure that are looking for growth, that are looking to develop and grow their businesses, and they've been able to take market share, and will take market share from as the industry regrows again from some of those feedlots that have closed.
You mentioned a moment ago those two atypical cases of BSE. It does seem, thankfully, isolated cases, and trade can resume. Beef Central yesterday reported that Indonesia has halted its beef imports from Brazil. What have you heard in that space?
Yeah, I've heard that Indonesia's suspended those imports. I mean, Indonesia was planning on taking about 20,000 tonnes of Brazilian beef this year, which is probably half or thereabouts in average numbers over average years of what Australia sends in box beef. So, look, it's a reasonable amount, 20,000 tonnes. It's not huge. I think, to be brutally honest, the amount of meat that's actually come in has been less than 2% of the imports of beef, live cattle and local product together. Mm. I don't think we'll notice that in Indonesia today.
And given it seems China and the Brazil trade is expected to resume soonish, would you also expect that maybe trade with Indonesia will follow suit?
I think it could. I think it could. At this stage, we haven't seen Brazil deliver large amounts of cheap meat or disrupt any meat programs in Indonesia. But you know, Brazil gives the Indonesian importers and the Indonesian people flexibility and also other options, and they'll always continue to look for those other options, and that's where we always need to have a safe product, whether it's live cattle or boxed beef, and a quality product, so that we can be competitive and have a good value proposition.
So, as you said, tough times for the trade right now. What gives you optimism about the coming years?
Look, for me, you know, the Indonesian population is, you know, circa 260 million people, so it's one of the bigger populations in the world. In the next 15 years or so, their economy's tipped to make it into sort of the top five economies in the world. And, you know, there's huge consumer demand for food in Indonesia. They love red meat. They love Australian red meat. We won't be the only supplier to this massive market. And I think, you know, the other thing that sits on top of that is if you look at how Indonesia's recovered from whether it was, you know, Asian financial crises or environmental crises or other challenging situations, it's been very, very quick. And the resilient nature of the culture of the people is exciting, and so I'm pretty confident about the opportunities in the future for Indonesia with us, for Australian suppliers and cattle producers.
Hey, thanks so much for your time this afternoon, Troy Setter. And just before I let you go, I've got one here for you regarding price of cattle. Have you heard this story out of Tamworth this week? A single Hereford cow selling for $4,114 at the Tamworth sale yards.
I have.
Can you believe that?
Probably I can, because I've seen the photos. But that's a big number to pay for a single commercial animal out of Tamworth sale yards.
To go straight into making burgers, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's got a good hide on it, and it'll make a good rug.
Have a lovely Friday. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, mate. Bye.
That is Troy Setter from the Consolidated Pastoral Company, and he's also a member of the Indonesia-Australia Red Meat Partnership.
This week on Landline, making every drop count. Potential irrigation futures for cotton growing.
We're a very dry continent in Australia. It's important with any megalitre that we have available, you know, we make the most of.
And returning the Star of Taroom home.
Who would have thought that a stone could carry so much love and hope?
That's Landline, 12:30 Sunday on ABC TV.
And the Marker Report, don't forget the Marker Report. We'll be taking a look at the start of the winter crop harvest. It is underway in central Queensland. They've been harvesting a bit of wheat over there this week, so taking a look at that and plenty more Sunday. Landline at 12:30. Now, how is this? The NT Farmers Association has created a brand new role to support farmers who are looking to diversify what they grow. Dominic Calder, he started in this position this week. He told Max Rowley, it's a really exciting time to be in Territory agriculture.
I guess with the way agriculture is going in the Northern Territory at the moment, in the north of Australia, it's just sort of booming and a lot happening. And, NT Farms is there to support all our growers. And, yeah, so the new role is to help with those growers who are looking to diversify and, sort of help them along that path a bit.
Why do you think it's important for growers to diversify, or to at least have that, you know, support if they want to at the moment?
Well, really, security on farm and security for the grower. Putting all your eggs in one basket can be a bit dangerous. We've seen that a lot down south. And, yeah, so having those alternative income streams, also, you know, improving your farming practices and stuff like that.
And what are some of the options at the moment in the NT in terms of diversifying? Like, what would you be talking to producers about in terms of that?
We've seen a lot of what were traditionally pastoral properties. And they're looking at things like hay and cotton and things like that. But there's also lots of the horticulture industry too. You know, mango grower might be looking for something to put up between his rows. He could be getting to look into cattle as well himself. So it's, there's lots of different options out there for people and lots of new ideas coming on.
Right, so this isn't just diversifying across, you know, different types of crops. It could also be livestock and crops and that kind of thing as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And lots of people have different ideas. There's lots of new ideas coming up all the time. Not necessarily any of those are wrong, and it's just trying to find the right ones for the right people with the right place. Because you know, you never know which one might be a good option.
And in terms of diversifying, have there been any challenges that you've seen for, you know, producers and growers in the past in terms of diversifying or not?
Look, I'm fairly new to the territory, but my understanding that I've been told, and you know, I've seen it firsthand myself, a lot of these things have been attempted time and time again, and there's been lots of failures, there's been some successes. Quite often what you find is maybe one person goes out on their own, gives it a crack, and whether it works or doesn't work, that's kind of where it ends. Whereas now you're starting to see a lot more interest across the board by a lot more people. So diversifying the whole industry, yeah, we just can only just make it stronger, really.
If I'm a grower or a producer then, and I'm looking to diversify, how can I get help or support from NT Farmers, or what kind of support is on offer?
Well, it's as simple as contact us. Simple as that. Walk in, give us a call, whatever you want to do. We're quite often out on people's farms all the time. What's on offer? We put you in contact with all different sort of like your government bodies, different science work that's been done around these different areas. Even if it's just your neighbour who you didn't realise was already doing this, we can go to them and ask them some questions and, you know, sort of help everyone out by just being a conduit for everyone, really.
That's Dominic Calder, who is the new Diversification Officer for the NT Farmers Association. It is 13 to 1. You are tuned into the Country Hour. Up next, you'll hear the epic tale about removing a massive ghost net off a reef just off the Groote Eylandt coast. So that's coming up on your radio in just a moment. But first, let's have a tune. A moment ago, we were speaking to Troy Setter from CPC. Off air, we asked if he'd like to hear a certain tune on the Country Hour today. He chose this one by Brooks and Dunn. Red Dirt Road, Brooks and Dunn on a Friday afternoon. I hope you enjoyed that one, Troy Setter.
Yo, namare. My name's Gorgoro Hick. I work for Dimuru Aboriginal Corporation in Northeast Arnhem Land. One of our mottos is Nilamuru Bukmatjaka Wangao, meaning all of us together looking after country. And you're listening to Country Hour on ABC.
How's this? A territory fishing crew has helped to clean up a massive ghost net that was stuck to a reef off the coast of Groote Eylandt. The MV Wildcard, it removed the net and towed it back to Groote with the help of the Andiliakwa Rangers. Skipper Bruce Davey had a chat to Dan Fitzgerald about how it all played out.
Yeah, so Wildcard was Spanish mackerel fishing well south of Groote there, and found a massive, what we call an FFV net, a foreign fishing vessel net. So it's important to stress these aren't Australian drift nets, ghost nets. These actually get, they generally wear out their time of uses, finishes, and the fishermen up to our north will just run those nets off and discard them at sea rather than taking them ashore where the Norwest monsoons from Christmas, New Year onward blow that and a whole heap of other marine debris down into the Gulf Carpentaria. There's a clockwise gyre that traps all this in the Norwellies. And then come April, May, June, the start of our seasonal winter southeasterlies, all that rubbish then that's pooled in the Gulf gets blown and it comes ashore there sort of south of Groote, southern east side of Groote. This net was large, it was over 2 tonne, it was attached to the reef, and on inspection found 2 small hawksbill turtles which were able to release from the net, brought them on board Wildcard where we just floated them in a swimming tank for a couple of hours to make sure that they were healthy for release, which they were. And then we contacted AMSA as that net was a hazard to shipping
In fact, that night, a large ore carrier heading down to Bingbong near the Van Allen Islands, MacArthur River, had only missed that net by about half a mile. And you can imagine any vessel actually getting that net caught around the propeller would be a major drama. And there's been numerous instances of that happening in the last 10 years of fishing vessels, etc.
And so it was stuck to the reef. How did you go about getting it off?
Well, we laid wildcard against the net so we could sort of appraise thing, and then it drifted off and pulled it off the bottom where it then became free floating. Unfortunately, the next day, BOM had issued strong wind warnings for the next 3 days. So we would normally have made up a tow sling and tried to tow that net in somewhere for disposal ashore. But given we were about, you know, over 100 miles from Alangoola at Milner Bay, Groote Eylandt, we just had to report the net, leave it there, and hopefully be able to come back when the weather allowed to retrieve the net.
How much later did you go back and retrieve that net?
Well, the normal course in instances like this, and this is, we think, the 21st net we've pulled out in the last 17 years. So we waited till Friday. AFMA engaged the wildcard to go and retrieve the net. So working closely with the Annandale Yakwa land and sea rangers, we ventured out on Friday. And we steamed nearly 100 miles down to Tasman Point, and then overnight copped an absolute flogging. It was still blowing 25 knots. So we got out into position where we calculated the currents would have carried that net, and with the assistance of a charter plane from Alangoola, we spent the whole day looking for that net. But unfortunately, we were unable to find it. It's all white bubbles. We'd put a big blinker pole on there so to make it find it easier to find, but we spent the whole day looking. So 4 o'clock we knew that there was another net down near Australia Bay on the south side of Groote, and we spent nearly 2 hours trying to recover the second net, but it was too firmly attached to the bottom, so we just kept snapping our tow rope. So we then steamed another 40 miles to a third net up at the Lumber Bay on the east side, southeast side of Groote Eylandt. And this net was pretty significant because it was actually ashore just off the largest recorded greenback turtle hatchery rookery beach down at the Lumber Bay. And we managed to get that net off on the first attempt. And then we towed it out into the deeper water, and 12 hours at 2.5-3 knots, we towed it all the way up to Umbacumba in Port Langan on the northeast side of Groote Eylandt, and then handed it over to the rangers there at the beach the next day.
Right, so you didn't get the net you originally set out for. Now that's still out there, is it?
Unfortunately, the original, the first net that had the two hawksbill turtles in it, is still drifting around somewhere. So given we've got a strong wind warning on now, and that's going to go for like 5 days, it'll either get washed ashore like the other two, or it'll just continue north from Cape Beatrice, Bombard Shoal, Groote Reef, all the way up to North East Island, where it'll go around and just continue going north towards Nhulunbuy.
How many ghost nets do you think are out in the Gulf at any one time?
Thousands. There's thousands of these nets. And, of course, nets are probably the poster card for marine debris. They actually represent a very small percentage of the overall marine debris that blows down from all those countries to our north. As I was saying, in those Christmas, New Year, nor'westerly monsoons, so water bottles, squid jigs are a big problem. They're actually quite interesting, these ghost nets. So, you know, they can be like this one here. It's probably a kilometre long if you stretched it out. And what happens always is they will pool and tangle up into a very tight knotted ball, you know, like 20 feet by 20 feet, and a bit like an iceberg. What you see on the surface, the bubbles, just add another 90%, which will be underwater. they actually become quite an ecosystem. You know, your algae, your weeds, the whole ecosystem will start growing under that net. And then they actually become like a fad fish attracting device. Then you get your little bait fish come in, and then you get your larger, you know, your little pelagics will come in. And then at some point you'll get hundreds of dolphin fish, triple tails and numerous other species that will live under that net because they love the shade. And it just becomes a self-feeding ecosystem until, you know, a shark or in this case turtles get close looking for a feed and then get washed into the net, get a flipper or their head caught, and then they can't get out and they die as well.
That is Bruce Davey, the skipper of the Wild Card. The net in question, it was pulled on shore by the Ndiliakwa Rangers, and Bruce tells us that after it gets inspected by the biosecurity and quarantine officers, it will be donated to the Ali Angula Art Centre, where the net will be turned into artwork, which is pretty cool, Hey, we've still got plenty to come on today's Country Hour, including a catch-up with ABC Kids' George the Farmer. I can't wait. Speaking to the Weather Bureau in 5 minutes' time as well. As always, if you've got a question that you'd like to ask the Bureau, send it through. 0487 99 1057 is our text here at the Country Hour. Let's go to the newsroom. It is 1 o'clock.
G'day, my name's Amy Snowden. I celebrate Australian agriculture using Lego, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
Matt Brown with you this afternoon. In a moment, we're off to Undoolia Cattle Station near Alice Springs for a bit of Bronco branding. And yes, it is true, before 1:30, we're doing the Mango Bango.
Do the Mango Bango, we all go bongo for the Mango Bango.
Yep, ABC Kids character George the Farmer is in the Northern Territory, hanging out with Territory farmers, checking out local produce. You'll learn more about George the Farmer before 1:30. Let's go to the Weather Bureau. Rebecca Patrick is there this afternoon. Beck, you a fan of George the Farmer?
I am not familiar with George the Farmer.
That's okay. Tonight you can get the ABC iView out and just binge watch George the Farmer. Get up to date.
Indeed. Yes. It is
a beautiful show. It's not just for kids, actually. I'll admit I've learned a few things watching George the Farmer. I was there taking a few notes. It's good stuff.
Excellent.
Hey, isn't it lovely to be here on a Friday and no warnings at all in the Northern Territory?
Yeah, that's good. We've had a bit of a busy week with the warnings, with the fire weather warnings and the marine warnings as well. But, yeah, finalised those. So we did have a marine warning this morning out for the Gove Peninsula coast, but that has backed off now. Now up to about 25 knots, but not quite that warning status. And the winds have eased across the Top End as well. Mm-hmm. Still a little bit of wind out there, but not as windy as it has been the rest of the week. So those fire weather warnings as well have eased off today.
So the weekend ahead for the Northern Territory, what can you tell us?
For the Top End, we are seeing a increase in the humidity coming across. So with those winds that have eased, that's allowing a few more sea breezes to come in. Also, the winds over in the across the Gulf of Carpentaria have turned a bit more easterly, so bringing a little bit of moisture from there as well. So that might see an increased chance of showers and storms moving across the Top End across the weekend. But good news for those heading out on the boat is that the winds will be a bit lighter than they have been this week. So that's a positive.
Okay. If you had to put the boat out in the harbour this weekend, what's the best day and time?
Well, depending, I'm not a boatie myself, but the winds are easing off. So Sunday is probably
Sunday.
The lighter day.
Mm-hmm. Beauty, yep. Central Australia. Especially everyone that's heading off to the Bronco branding in Undoolia, what can you tell them?
Should be fairly sunny through Central Australia. We're a little bit warm at the moment, sort of around that 30 degree mark. There is a trough moving across through the weekend, so should be reaching Alice Springs on Sunday. So there is a bit of a gusty southerly coming along during Sunday, so it might be a little bit windy. But yes, tomorrow conditions should be fairly nice, warm and sunny.
Beauty. Now, you mentioned the possibility of the odd shower in the top end and a bit of humidity around, but in terms of any significant rainfall ahead, what does the crystal ball say?
It depends what you call significant rainfall. We're just sort of seeing the odd shower across the top end initially. There is a chance of storms developing around Tuesday, but it's still early days at this stage.
Anything else we need to be aware of?
I think they're the main things. Yeah, so yeah, just a bit of a easing of conditions compared to the last week.
No worries. All right, I'll let you go and strike up the ABC iView, so you can catch up with a few episodes of George.
Will do. That can be my weekend activity.
Oh, there you go. You're sorted. Yeah, have a lovely afternoon.
Thanks, Matt.
The Eagles have landed on the MCG in 2018. It's a premiership masterpiece from the Tigers, all in yellow and black, a 12th AFL flag. The Tigers are still the best team in the land. Three flags in 4 years for Richmond.
Who's next? The AFL Grand Final on ABC Radio and ABC Sport Digital.
The Undulia Bronco branding competition is on this weekend near Alice Springs. Sounds like the weather will be beautiful. This event, it's hosted by the men's health charity Broken Spur. Hugo Rickard-Bell went along to Undulia to see how preparations were coming along and had a chat to the president of Broken Spur.
Yeah, hello, I'm Robbie Schmidt. I'm the president of the Broken Spur Association.
And some say a bit of a Bronco branding guru.
That's what they say, but I keep that to my chest and, don't like to promote it too much.
For those listening who don't really know what Bronco branding is, could you fill us in? What is it?
Yeah, you've got, it's just a traditional way of branding cattle. You have a bloke on a horse, he's got his bronco harness on, you have a rope clipped to that bronco harness. Nowadays we use a safety thing. If something goes wrong, we can unclip that animal so there's no sort of major damage. And then you just go out, you catch your calf, you have three ground crew for your singles, one on the front leg, back leg and a branding man. You bring them up to the panel, you fork the panel, which is when the rope goes through the middle of the panel, and then they put their leg ropes on. They can't do anything until that animal has left clear of the mob. Once upon a time, obviously, they used to castrate and brand and earmark, whereas now, because of animal health and welfare, we don't do that. We use paint brands instead, so we just put a T brand on their rump and then a head brand on their head, and then it's done over the three animals, like, to see who's got the quickest time. You get penalties, obviously, if there's a brand that's smudged, if there's a leg rope that's not on properly, and stuff like that. If there's if one's pulled up to the panel too quick, you get penalised for that, like, dangerous thing to the animal. And then we also have a doubles, where you have two catches. That can be a bit more exciting. And then you still have only the three on the ground crew, but you've actually got to catch five calves. So your ground crew sort of need to be reasonably fit, because if you've got two catches that are firing on the day, those calves come up pretty quick.
And Bronco branding as a station practice, used much anymore?
Not really. I know of a few places in South Australia that still use it in their second round. Mainly, I think a lot of it's used nowadays just to keep those ones that do it for competition, to keep their eye in, but mainly for competition. So obviously that we still do, or Benny still does a bit of Undulia just for a practice, so that we can keep our horses tuned up, and plus all your ground crew tuned up for it. So
yeah, it's a real old style way of doing the branding, but what I'm interested in is when you are in competition, what are you looking for when you pick your beast?
Your ground crew, they sort of want you always to try them, because obviously we use weaners. you've got to use cattle at a certain height. You're not allowed to use little calves anymore because of the welfare issue. Yeah, as a catcher, you probably don't really worry about your crown crew too much. You sort of, because you want to get your first one on the board because you've only got 2 minutes to catch your first one. So you try and set yourself up and make it so you get a shot that you reckon you can catch with. And that might be a big calf, it might be a small calf. But yeah, you just sort of take what you can get.
Anyone who's interested in coming down and having a go, what sort of advice could you give them?
Yeah, like we always recommend it. If people want to start doing it, they start off on the ground crew so that they get used to what's going on. We find that if you've caught, want to catch, you sort of need to have a bit of experience under your belt because things can go pretty well wrong if you don't know what you're doing, as in because you've got the rope hooked to your harness. And if you're not watching where the horse is stepping to, that rope can get slack. And the horse can get caught up in it, and then it can go horribly wrong.
What are you looking forward to this weekend?
No, just looking forward to catching up with a few mates that every year that sort of only see here. And then plus the competition, I'll enjoy that a fair bit. Have been lucky in the last few years to pick up a bit of prize money. If you get that at the end of the day, it's a bonus. But yeah, just the enjoyment of the day and catching up with people and having a bit of a laugh.
That is Robbie Schmidt, the president of Broken Spur and this Bronco branding competition. So it's on tomorrow at Undoolia Station. Kicks off at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, goes until late. $15 for adults. Children under 18 years of age are free. It'll be a lot of fun.
Hi, my name is Trent McDonald and I'm from Arena Station.
Hi, my name's Liam. I am Liam Tutu and I'm from Kicks in the Park.
Hi, my name is Lynn and we live out of town.
We are listening to the Country Hour.
Now, if you haven't done it already, make sure you jump onto ABC iView or YouTube and check out the adventures of George the Farmer.
G'day, I'm Simone.
And I'm Ben. And this is our mate George the Farmer. And if there's one thing we love about summer is that it's nice and hot and we don't have to rug up too much.
That's right, but we still need to wear our sun protection, don't we, George? But it's far too hot for woolly jumpers. Here at the Kidman Family Farm near Coonawarra in South Australia, the sheep are ready to lose their woolly jumpers so that they can feel cooler in summer too.
And you'll be amazed at the products that we can make from wool. And we're about to meet another farmer called George who's going to teach us all about shearing and this amazing natural fibre.
G'day, George.
Yep, George the Farmer. It's a wonderful show that is dedicated to teaching kids about where their food and their fibre comes from. And guess what? George and his friends Simone and Ben, they are in the Northern Territory. They've been filming some brand new episodes and they're with us now. Welcome to the Country Hour.
Thanks, Matt. We're so excited to be here and producing all this new content to really showcase Northern Territory produce.
Now, Simone, tell us the George the Farmer story. Where did it all start?
Well, about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, I was pregnant with my twin boys and my son George was two at the time. He was obsessed by the farm. My husband's a farmer as well, and any opportunity he had, he wanted to go out there or, you know, he'd sit up at the bench and read the farm trading machinery books. And I had a look online trying to find something for him to fall in love with that was either a book or as an app around farming and especially, so Australian ag. And I just couldn't find anything. And Ben and I also have a creative agency. And so I had a chat with Ben and said, Ben, I think there's this great opportunity to tell the stories of Australian agriculture for kids all around the country. And so that basically kicked it off. And we launched George the Farmer as an interactive story app in 2015. And then it's just grown from there into picture books and videos and performance and music. And
come into the Northern Territory. Can you remember the light bulb moment when you came up with the working title, George the Farmer?
Well, we started off as Frank the Farmer, actually.
Frank the Farmer.
Yeah. Yeah, Frank the Farmer.
Bit of alliteration. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we did a bit of a Google search and found that that was actually trademarked by Sesame Street. So luckily, George's son is the namesake, George the Farmer. So that's how he went into it. And then
I ended up having a Frank, one of the twins.
Well, you did have a Frank. That's right. But then we actually found out after that, George in Greek means farmer.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, which was a very happy coincidence.
And I named my son George, and I didn't even know that.
Wow. And so here in the Northern Territory, are you able to tell us a little bit about what you've been up to?
Yeah. So we're up here on behalf of the Northern Territory farmers, and we are producing 3 paddock to plate videos on mangoes, melons and Asian greens, which is part of the federal government's Kids to Ag program. So, yeah, basically they're 5 to 7 minute videos where we go out and investigate how the produce is grown, and then which we've shot all now in Darwin and surrounds, and then we'll go back home to the southeast of South Australia into our kitchen studio, and we'll whip up some produce with the same produce and show the kids how to make something really yummy. Like I think we're doing with Asian greens, we're doing pork mince and sizzling snake beans.
Yeah, that's right. We've got some mango smoothies on order as well, which is going to be fantastic. And what are we doing for watermelons?
We're doing watermelon sorbet.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Good.
Beautiful, beautiful. Now, George the Farmer, he's not just on the TV. He has found his way into the school curriculum, yes?
Yeah, so as part of the educational content that we produce, we also work with educational consultants to develop resources for teachers to use in the classroom, totally aligned to the school curriculum for reception or foundation 3 to year 4 kids. They focus on STEAM subjects, so science and technology, engineering, arts and maths. And basically, the teachers can download these resources for free and teach kids about, say, science while they're also learning about produce. So, you know, about wool or wheat or apples. We've got about 7 resources now that teachers can get their hands on.
Yeah, all the way to forestry as well, which is pretty cool. So.
And is it popular? Are you getting a lot of traction?
Yeah, very popular. So we've just released, as part of the South Australian resources for the same project, 5 new resources. And the uptake, I think in 3 weeks, we had about 600 downloads of those resources. And what's really pleasing is that a lot of those resources are now coming out of city locations.
So if there's a teacher in the Northern Territory listening to this and they want a bit more George the Farmer in their life and in their classroom, what can they do?
Well, yeah, they've just got to head to our website, georgethefarmer.com.au, and all the resources are there for them to be able to download for free. And they can jump on there, download them, plug them straight into their classroom as well, which is really cool. And, you know, for mums and dads and carers as well, there's a whole heap of activity packs there that they can download and print as well. So the kids can learn, all about ag. Exactly where their food and fibre comes from George the Farmer himself.
Binge the series on ABC iView. Yeah. You can't be stuck on Bluey, any diet, you've got to have a bit of variety.
Best thing is it's like guilt-free viewing, so parents, you can't feel guilty. You can show our
Because you're learning.
Like, right. Exactly. Yeah.
And you can hear our songs over and over again.
I must admit, the Apple episode, I learned a few things. Yeah. It's not just for kids.
No, I learned
a few things in the Apple episode.
Yeah, we do get that feedback from adults as well through all of our resources and, our books as well, that they'll be reading something and go, I didn't know that. And we shouldn't really know all of that unless we are reading and watching and learning about agriculture. We've got, my kids grow up on a sheep and cattle property, but they don't know anything about mangoes or Asian greens. So, that's the benefit of George, is that he's really trying to educate about all types of types of food throughout sector.
I mean, the agriculture sector is just so huge. I mean, we've gone from, forestry to apples, to wool to chickpeas. Now we're doing mangoes, Asian greens. I mean, having to come up with a song for Asian greens was an interesting exercise, but we got it done. But there's just so many other things, aquaculture, horticulture. We're going to be telling stories forever, I think.
Yep. You mentioned it there. Every episode does have a song. Do you have a favourite one out of interest?
My favourite one sort of swaps. On this trip, I really love the Asian greens because I think, our natural tendency would have been to probably make it sound a bit oriental, I guess. I was thinking maybe kung fu fighting or something, but you know what? Asian greens have such really rock names like bitter melon, okra, and snake beans. So I thought, I'm going to make this a heavy metal track.
Yes.
So there's this huge drum solo at the start. We get right into it. George and Simone just dance around headbanging and getting right into it.
Yeah,
and,
we're tapping away with the bitter melon.
Yeah, with a bitter melon.
Out in the, awesome. Yeah, so I think,
Asian greens is probably my favourite one at the moment, yeah.
How long do we have to wait to be able to see these episodes?
Well, they'll be released just in time for National Ag Day, which is November the 19th, and you'll be able to catch them on YouTube definitely by then, and hopefully going into next year on the ABC.
Fantastic. Now, I'm devastated that we don't have the rock and roll Asian greens song to share with our audience, but we do have Mango Bongo, so let's give that a spin. Simone and Ben from George the Farmer, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks so much, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
Do the mango bango, we all go bongo for the mango bango. Tastes so sweet, so mango bango, we all go bongo for the mango bango. Tastes so sweet, so mango is a stone fruit, but it ain't that heavy. People like to eat them more than they can carry. Mangoes are found all around the world, from the top of India to Mexico. Do the mango bango, we all go bongo for the mango bango.
George the Farmer, you can catch him on ABC iView and ABC Me. Big thanks to Simone and Ben. If you wake up tonight with this song in your head, I take no responsibility. Hope you've enjoyed the Country Hour this week. If you've missed any of our stories, you can catch them online. Keep it rural.
Mango has a sweet taste and texture, they cool you down during hot December. Do the mango bango, we all go bongo for the mango bango. Tastes so sweet, so mango bango, we all go bongo for the mango bango. Tastes so sweet, oh, oh.